I'm definitely not staying out here tonight. It's far too cold, and it looks as though we might get some snow. Let's go inside and have a nice glass of something warming and a mince pie before a roaring fire. You look cold. Sit down in the big armchair whilst I put another log on the fire. Just move that Christmas stocking out of the way. Whilst you're devouring that mince pie, I'll tell you a special Christmas tale. You may have heard it before, but we all enjoy the cosy and familiar at this time of year. It's called Sir Reginald's Christmas Carol.
"You'll want all day tomorrow, then," thundered Sir Reginald to his one-legged, tattooed manservant, Phillips, "so you can get up to some shady dealings with that cutthroat crew you roamed the seven seas with on the good ship Nancy. Spending all day in some shady dockside tavern, cooking up your villainies."
Phillips had despaired of ever getting Sir Reginald to understand that he was given to seasickness, and his previous trade had been as a gentleman's hairdresser in Poole, and had never been to sea in his life. Not even as far as taking a trip round Brownsea Island on a motor launch, much less as a pirate. Clump, whirr, clump, whirr, clump, whirr. Phillips continued propelling his master's bath chair along the clifftop path beneath the pines on this darkening Christmas Eve afternoon. "If it's convenient, I would like this evening as well."
"What? What? What?"
Sir Reginald was now incandescent with rage.
"The whole of Christmas Day and Christmas Eve? That's the sort of anarchy that brought about the downfall of the Empire. Good God, man, have you absolutely no principles at all? I never took a day off in my whole life. We need to fight communism in all its forms, especially at Christmas."
Phillips thought that for once in his life he would like to be there when his nephews and nieces were opening their presents, and his widowed sister had put a great deal of pressure on him to abandon Sir Reginald for once.
Perhaps, if I am not there, you will not be reminded of Christmas. I may inadvertently whistle a festive tune." "Harumph!" harumphed Sir Reginald.
"Yeah, I will leave everything laid out for you. There is a fine Stilton on the sideboard and vintage port that I have already decanted."
Well, the mention of Stilton, Sir Reginald was somewhat mollified. He could perhaps manage an evening and a day with a wheel of Stilton. Very well, but it'll come off this week's wages. I don't want to be paying to foster your criminal socialist lifestyle. If I had an ounce of sense, I'd report you to the customs and excise forthwith. It must be going soft.
As they rounded a corner, they came upon a party of small children. Sir Reginald waved his stick at them. But instead of fleeing in disorder as they should have done, they took the stick waving as some sort of signal. And they began to sing, their small piping voices filling the afternoon air. Silent night, holy night. All is calm, all is bright. When they had finished, Sir Reginald pointed to one of the urchins. His thin clothes were patched and ragged.
You, yes, you boy, what have you got to be so cheerful about?
Why, sir, piped the lad, it's Christmas Eve, sir. We all comes from the orphanage on the other side of town. Matron can't afford a turkey nor nothing, but she says if we're good today, we can have spaghetti for dinner tomorrow. Proper spaghetti out of a tin. We are collecting for children who are worse off than we are. Spare us a penny, sir.
A penny? A penny? Do you think I'm made of money?
Oh, sorry, sir. We can see you are old and crippled yourself on account of you having to be pushed around in a bath chair and so on. So you must be deserving of charity yourself.
Of course I'm deserving. I didn't slave away all those years in the service of the king and country to find myself in this state.
Well, we haven't collected no money as yet, but you can share our bag of sweeties that matron gave us before we come out.
And so saying, a grubby hand holding a paper bag was thrust under Sir Reginald's nose, and Sir Reginald, being Sir Reginald, took two and popped them in his mouth. The urchins tumbled past him and made off down the path. He could hear their voices calling to him in the afternoon air,
"A Merry Christmas, sir! A Merry Christmas!"
And
proper spaghetti from a tin.
Sir Reginald grimaced.
What was this he was sucking? A humbug? Bah, Christmas!
And just when he thought he was safe, who should he encounter on the path but another bath chair going in the contrary direction? Sir Reginald's heart sank. It was that well-known suffragist, Dame Amelia Vole, and her constant companion, Miss Pym, a tall, angular female of indeterminate years, she surprisingly athletic beneath her shapeless grey smock.
"Out of my way!"
yelled Sir Reginald.
"My right of way, coming through!"
Good afternoon, Sir Reginald, and a Merry Christmas to you. Would you like to contribute to the fund for poor refugees?"
And Miss Pym brandished a tin at him.
"Is that all Christmas has become? A penny here and a penny there. You'd bleed me dry if you could. Christmas has lost all true meaning and just become an excuse for money grabbing and swindling." When will we be able to return to the true spirit of Christmas and leave people like me alone?
Come, come, Sir Reginald. You know the donation of a small gift would give you a feeling of warm satisfaction.
The only thing that would give me any satisfaction would be loading all your refugees into a boat and throwing you in with them and setting you off to sail to somewhere where you can't bother me anymore.
It strikes me you have a great deal to learn about Christmas. You must be eligible for a visit from the Three Spirits.
You, madam, appear to have gone utterly gaga. I can't make any sense out of your communistic blathering.
You know Dickens, A Christmas Carol.
I haven't got the faintest idea what you're talking about.
Surely even you, with three ghosts, visit Scrooge on Christmas Eve and teach him a valuable lesson.
You mean like those damnable interfering social services? And who pays for those? It's that socialist damn council wasting my hard-earned money!
Never mind, says Dame Amelia Vole. A Merry Christmas anyway.
Back at Grand Marine Court, Sir Reginald was preparing for bed. He had on his long striped nightshirt and his betasseled nightcap. He seemed almost gleeful as he scooped another plateful of the Stilton and poured himself a generous measure of the twinkling ruby port wine. Tonight there was no Phillips to look disapprovingly at his overindulgence. No, he was content. He settled back in his armchair and dozed off.
He was rudely shaken awake by a sudden knocking at the door. What the dickens? He muttered. Where was Phillips when you needed him? Nevertheless, he turned the handle, and there stood a small boy. He looked suspiciously like the orphan from the West Cliff. The lad was holding a steaming bowl of spaghetti.
I am the ghost of Christmas, Pastor.
He twirled rapidly with his fork.
Long, Pastor.
Ghost, eh? Shouldn't be allowed. I'll have the pest control officer here in the morning.
I have come to show you your past life and tell you where you went wrong.
Now, the one thing Sir Reginald did not want shown him was his past. There might be too many questions about his tax affairs and how he came to be awarded quite so many medals and honours for his services to India when the furthest east he had ever got was Walthamstow.
No, not interested, sonny. Sling your hook.
And he slammed the door and settled back in his armchair, his heart hammering with fear that they might at last have caught up with him. Barely had he closed his eyes when there was another knock on the door.
Now what?
He fumed, leaping up. There stood the same urchin as before.
Persistent little devil, aren't ya?
Please, sir, I am the ghost of Christmas present.
Why, you said just now you were the ghost of Christmas past.
Come back, sir,
I'm doubling up tonight. Let me show you what is happening in the Phillips household." And there they were, apparently hovering in mid-air in a modest council flat in Poole. There, propped against the fireplace, a wooden leg, sad and forlorn. The children gathered round the table, looking at the frugal meal set before them. Their eyes were tear-stained, and their cheeks were hollow from their weeping. "Poor Tiny Tim," said the woman, evidently the Phillips sister. They all started wailing anew. "Never mind, children," said Phillips. "I'll buy you a new guinea pig when I can afford it." The widow's lips quivered. "Oh, that skinflint master of yours, if he paid you enough, we could have guinea pig every Sunday." Phillips, balancing on his one leg, raised his glass and said, "God bless us, every one." "Well, damn his eyes, the ungrateful wretch! I'll dock him 2 weeks' wages for that." And he aimed a kick at the ghost of Christmas present, who left as quickly as he had come. As before, he had barely closed his eyes when there came a third knock. "Damn the damnable communists," he bellowed, and flung the door wide. "I suppose you're the third apparition. Perhaps after you've done your party piece, you can leave me alone." "I see the future. A coffin with your name on it, and people dancing. They are dancing on your grave."
"Wow, that's excellent news. I'm going to be buried at sea." "Well, if that's all of you, perhaps I can get a proper night's sleep now."
And his sleep was indeed long and untroubled. The next afternoon, when Philip stumped back in, he found his master in surprisingly good spirits. "Did you have a good day, sir?"
"No, I damn well did not. I had the most terrible dreams last night. I was visited by strange apparitions that showed me scenes from my life in the past and future. I feel wretched today."
"I am sorry to hear that, sir.
At least what that old trout Vole said has come true. My dreams have taught me a valuable lesson."
"Oh, may I inquire what that is?"
"Not to eat so much bloody cheese before I go to bed."
Thank you for listening to that. Let me wish you the season's greetings, whatever season it may be for you. And I'll see you again in the new year.